Thanks for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. You know, every year about 40,000 Americans are hospitalized with severe burn injuries. And because burn victims require specialized treatment and long periods of recovery, the medical care they need can be very expensive. And today, we're talking about a possible new treatment for burn injuries. Join us, a couple of guests, as a matter of fact. One, Dr. Angela Gibson, a medical director of the UW Health Wound Healing Services in the Department of Surgery at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Gibson is also vice chair of research in the department's Division of Acute Care and Regional General Surgery. Dr. Gibson, welcome. Thanks for joining today.
Thank you for having me.
With us as well, Dr. Brian Pogue, who chairs the Wisconsin Institute for Medical Research Department of Medical Physics. And Dr. Pogue, welcome to you as well. Thank you for joining in.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Have you suffered from severe burns or had a loved one or close relative have that issue? How were your injuries treated? Was the recovery long and difficult? I'm sure it was. Dr. Gibson, maybe first you could describe how challenging it is to treat burn injuries using the current methods that we have.
Yeah, it is pretty challenging in that things haven't changed a whole lot in the last, 50 years, although we've had a lot of advances in how we care for burns. It's been really challenging to translate those to humans. A lot of the studies are done in animals, and they don't always translate to humans. So we're relying on a lot of the things that we have used for many years, pretty simple washing the wounds, taking care of them, getting good pain control, and putting on some pretty simple dressings.
Yeah, and you have something like this, obviously, on the face of it, it's terrible, but there are complications that can come to the fore, Dr. Pogue, with burn wounds. Are there not?
Well, I'll probably let Dr. Gibson answer this one. I'm coming in more from the physics and engineering side.
Okay, Dr. Gibson?
Yeah, so complications with burns can be anywhere from short-term, such as infection, delayed wound healing, and then long-term scarring that affects functional outcomes. And addition to all of that, it's the traumatic injury itself and the trauma that people have to go through to recover from the injury, the pain that goes along with healing and just, the emotional trauma of having been involved in a traumatic event like a burn.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're very costly to treat, partly because of the time, as you suggest. Skin grafting is attaching healthy skin to an area of severely burned skin. Why might you want an alternative to skin graft surgery, Dr. Gibson?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's actually one of the main reasons why, we're interested in developing advanced therapies to treat burns is that skin graft requires us to take skin from somewhere else on a person's body, because only your own skin can be used to skin graft a burn or a wound. And taking that donor site, as we call it, really is painful. It's basically removing the upper layers of skin and exposing the nerve endings. And then that is another wound that they have to heal in. So if there's any way that we can avoid doing that, that's why we're working at trying to develop new technologies to let people heal their burns in on their own.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Pogue, maybe a research interest of yours is photodynamic therapy. What is that, and how is it currently used?
Sure. Yeah, photodynamic therapy. It's the way to think of it is it's a light activated chemotherapy. So you can kill or damage tissue with light by giving this injectable or topical agent. And so normally it's used like in cancers or precancers to kill them. But what we've been thinking about and looking at in this new research direction is giving sort of a light version of it. If you can think about it, that old adage that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. It's sort of a light. If you give a light version of it, it can actually stimulate the tissue to to heal itself a little better.
And you and the two of you recently received, I think it was a three-year grant, $600,000 from the Wisconsin Partnership Program to test the effectiveness of photodynamic therapy for burn wound care. Why do you think this might work?
Well, I think from just a real simplistic view, if we can increase the wound healing capacity and there's enough, you know, we change the environment of the wound to enhance that healing, I think there's definitely, it's worth trying this in to try to avoid having to take that donor site. And so we're really excited about the opportunity to potentially do this research with this Wisconsin Partnership Program grant. It was really exciting for us to receive that.
Maybe talk about what that Wisconsin Partnership Grant Program is. I'm sure a lot of people aren't familiar with it.
Yeah, so it's an internal funding through our institution that was created many, many years ago. I think they're having their 20th anniversary this year, where they basically, their mission is to positively impact the health of Wisconsin. And so they solicit for funding opportunities for various, many, many different types of research. And they have a wonderful panel that reviews them. And they include, they actually include outside members, so people who aren't specifically doing the research, but to, from the community to help understand what this impact could have for the community. So it's been a really wonderful program to provide pilot funding for various studies and new avenues of study.
This spring, you presented research on the use of delayed fluorescence on burn wound healing. And you described this as a novel approach, if I'm not mistaken. How will this or will this new research relate to your work?
So this new research is more focused on a therapeutic, so not so much looking at how we assess the depth of the burn, but in treating the burn, and so in providing a treatment that may enhance the healing. You know, I could see in the future there could be some synergy between the two in understanding the depth of the burn, potentially to determine if this therapy would be helpful.
Yeah. Dr. Pogue?
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah. So in that work, we discovered that this photodynamic agent preferentially does exist in burn. So it's a naturally occurring molecule called protoporphyrin 9. And so that is a photosensitizer. And so we can use that to activate and deliver photodynamic therapy within burns. And just as Dr. Gibson was saying, you know, if you can stimulate the wound to heal itself a little better, then it reduces the need to do skin grafting. And so that's the gist of our focus is, can we stimulate burns to heal themselves a little bit better, and especially, you know, just burns that may be on the edge of needing a graft or not needing a graft to stimulate themselves.
How big an area do you need to have before, or how small an area before skin grafting comes into play?
It depends more on the depth of the burn. So if the depth of the burn is deep enough that it's removed all the regenerative capacity of the skin and it's bigger than, say, you know, a couple of centimeters wide and it's in a functional area, all of those things make us think that we need to do skin grafting. And so, you know, even small burns that are on the hands or the feet or the face, those, if they're deep enough, they will require skin grafting to avoid really aberrant scarring.
Our guests today, Dr. Angela Gibson and Dr. Brian Pogue, are working on they have a new research grant, $600,000 grant from the Wisconsin Partnership Program, to test the effectiveness of photodynamic therapy for burn wound care. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with our guest, Dr. Angela Gibson, Dr. Brian Pogue, as we talk with them about their research on burns. And just a reminder, if you missed part of our show or just want to hear it again, you can always go to our archive at WPR.org/Larry to hear recordings of all of our broadcasts going back a long, long way. Dr. Gibson, to determine whether this PDT is safe for treating burn injuries, you'll be testing the therapy on pigs, as I understand it. Why pigs?
Yeah, so pigs are the animal model that most closely represent human skin. And they're a large enough animal that we can do a lot of different conditions on each animal, because our goal is to do as few animal experiments as possible. But it really is important, as you mentioned, to make sure that this is going to be safe and effective before we think about transitioning to human studies.
Yeah, and I understand that you'll be working with veterinary staff at UW-Madison.
Yeah, we have a wonderful pig core facility that allows us to perform these studies in a very humane manner, and they receive wonderful care at this facility.
Yeah. Dr. Pogue, how important is animal testing in medical research like this?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's essential. It's an essential step. It's not the only step. Of course, we've done a lot of research already in mice, and a lot goes on in terms of planning, but in the end, before you go to human studies, you have to try them in a living system that mimics human skin. And so, just as Dr. Gibson said, I think the swine model is the model that's fundamentally accepted all over as the best surrogate for human skin.
Wow. And if this PDT therapy, so what's the process on this? This is a long process? Well, I guess you've got 3 years of research time to spend on it, but
So I could just say, I mean, the key is we don't know the drug dose level or the light dose level that's appropriate, right? And so that's exactly why we couldn't jump into humans use or study, because, you know, we really need to try different drug dose levels and light dose levels to figure out the sweet spot of where it works the best. Because if you overtreat, you can do harm. And if you undertreat, there's no value. So it's really, we have to find just the right level of drug and light dose that causes this effect, this sort of therapeutic effect that we're looking for.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think I mentioned there's something like 40,000 severe burns in the U.S. every year. How many do we have in Wisconsin, Dr. Gibson?
But I don't have the exact numbers in Wisconsin for all burns, but we admit about 300 to 350 burns to our burn center at the University of Wisconsin. We are the only level one adult and pediatric verified burn center in Wisconsin. And about a third of those are actually pediatric burns. And there's also a burn center in Milwaukee that does adult, and a burn center in Milwaukee and a pediatric surgical center that does pediatric burns in Milwaukee. So there's a good number of patients who do require admission for their burn injury here.
Yeah, and I had been thinking, and Joel, I know our producer today had a question about that too, and Jeff, what are the most common causes of these burns?
Yeah, I'd say the most common that people forget about all the time is putting accelerants on fires. So when people are doing bonfires and just want to get it going a little bit more, they throw gasoline and other, you know, lighter fluid, things like that, just to get it going. And that is absolutely one of the most common ways we see in burn injury. In pediatrics, we see a lot of scald injuries, usually around the year to year and a half, 2 year old, where they're getting up, moving around, pulling things off of the counters, being at their parents' feet while they're cooking and stuff. So just being careful. In the winter, we see fireplace, you know, hands on fireplace for pediatric patients. But really, it's that kind of accelerant on things that I think really catches people by surprise.
Yeah, as many times as we see and hear information about it, it's that's not going to happen to me. I'll just throw some gas on that.
Yeah. All the time people say that. They say, I've done this all the time. It's never been a problem. And all it takes is one time.
Somebody else, we have an email here. What's the difference between first, second, and third degree burns?
Yeah, so first degree burn is like a sunburn. The upper layer of skin, the epidermis, is damaged, but it doesn't go deeper into the dermis. A third degree burn goes all the way through the dermis to the subcutaneous tissue, and that absolutely requires a surgery to heal in if it's big enough because there's nothing to heal it in. And then a second degree is this big area or this big group of burns that's anywhere from a superficial second, so it's just kind of getting a little bit into the dermis, all the way down to deep second degree or deep partial thickness burns. And those oftentimes do require surgery because they've really burned through all of the regenerative areas within the skin.
Oh, do sunburns ever get to third degree?
No, not a normal sunburn. Yeah. So sunburns do sometimes become second degree where they start to blister. If you do have blistering sunburn, that is a second degree burn.
Okay. And do they tend to undergo multiple surgeries? Because there's, I'm wondering about children here for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Is treatment for children with burns more complicated?
It is because of trying to minimize pain and suffering. I mean, obviously, we want to minimize that for adults as well as pediatrics, but it's the margin of error is much smaller with younger kids. And so not only trying to get them in a dressing that we can change less frequently to reduce their pain, but also just the impact that a burn has on the physiology of a pediatric patient is often much more severe.
Dr. Polg, I'm thinking back to the research that you're doing, would this be a possibility for use with young children?
I think ideally we would like that, but I think rarely would you want to start there. We probably start more carefully in adults. Again, Dr. Gibson might correct me there.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, most technologies that come out for all of our medical patients start with adults and then making sure that it's safe and appropriate and then testing it on pediatrics.
Boy, I'm thinking it's got to be difficult with burns with kids because they're growing.
Yeah. So the scarring can become much more problematic if they're growing and their skin isn't growing normally with them. And so we try to get them to heal in with as little scarring as possible.
Are there, here's another email, are there any home remedies you recommend for like first degree burns, or should people seek professional treatment first or second?
So for first degree burns, cooling, don't ever put ice on burns because ice will cause the blood vessels to constrict and it can deepen the severity of the burn. And so cool water for the pain control. And then if the skin is still intact, as it would be with a first-degree burn, just using lotion is a good way to treat that. For a second-degree burn, where the skin is actually sloughed off and there's blisters, washing that well, getting all those blisters off, and then treating them with an antimicrobial topical ointment and a nonstick gauze, that, if it's small enough, that can be done at home. But if the pain is too much, such that the person isn't actually washing it well to clean it, then they should seek medical professional help.
Amy and Eau Claire emailed to say they've read about sugar packing wounds and burns to increase the speed of healing. Is there anything to this method?
Not that I know of. I'm unfamiliar with that.
Sugar packing wounds. It doesn't sound like it would work for me, but how did you get interested? Well, let me turn to Dr. Polk. How did you get interested and involved in this burn research to begin with?
Well, I got into it through Dr. Gibson, really. My expertise is in photodynamic therapy, which is the mechanisms and the delivery of this light-activated treatment. And again, I'm more of a cancer person, but through discussions with Dr. Gibson, we realized that there's potential for this to activate the tissue. And again, the original part of this, I think, is that you know, it is a, it's a way to kill or harm tissue, but if you give just a very small amount of it, you can actually activate tissue to heal itself. And that, I think that's the key part that we're most excited about.
Yeah. And Dr. Gibson, how did you get this become an interest for you?
So burns became an interest for me. I started my career as a nurse, and my first unit that I started on was the burn unit, and I haven't left since. Just became very enthralled with the patient population and the ability to see the wounds healing, and the burn survivors are just amazing people who, you know, go through such traumatic injuries and come out much stronger individuals. So I really love the patient population, and I love watching the wounds heal, and I love doing research on it.
Yeah, I would think so. I think there's got to be a mental side to this to someone who is, especially if it's a burn that is disfigured to any, you know, arms or face or something.
Yeah, it's definitely trauma that they both emotionally and physically have to be helped heal through. We have wonderful support systems for our burn survivors, and I encourage, you know, if someone does have an injury that they haven't been seen at our institution but want to get connected with our burn survivors, that they should reach out to our burn center.
Oh, and how would you do that?
They can just look up the burn center on the internet and give us a call, and we will start helping people get connected.
So UW-Madison Burn Center, something like that, into
UW Health Burn Center.
Okay. The research on this is going to go on over the next 3 years. If this proves effective for the treatment of burns, how soon might human trials start?
Well, I think that depends a little bit. I'll ask Dr. Pogue to weigh in on kind of developing the actual tools to do that.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dr. Pogue.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, it's a little unclear at this point, right? But photodynamic therapy is delivered to patients for skin treatments every day for precancerous lesions. So and the drug that we use is approved for human use, and the light delivery systems exist. So that's one of the more exciting things about this, is that if we see that it's working, the potential to translate into a human clinical trial would be seamless, you know, really quite easy.
And what would a trial consist of in like this? Usually you have a control and a treatment in a trial.
Yeah, it just depends on how the study is designed, but oftentimes we can do an intra-patient control. So the patient themselves, we would split their burn wound in half or in, you know, parts, and we would treat one part of it and not treat the other. Sometimes we don't need that control necessarily, and so it just depends on how we design the study.
So that's an interesting way to think about it. I hadn't thought about it, treating half a wound and one way and the other half in another way, and then just checking to see which one works the best.
Yeah.
That is very, very interesting. Well, what's your prognosis, Dr. Pogue? Do you think you're going to get this done in 3 years?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm very excited. I think we'll be jumping into it very quickly. And, again, we've been spending a fair bit of time working with mice, but really we've got to get to the real tissue that simulates humans in the pig model to test it out. So we'll give some answers within a year or two, for sure.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you both today. I want to thank you so much. I really thank you so much for this work. I mean, this is really important work. And it's I hope it leads to a better outcome for the many thousands of people that suffer burns every year. Thank you both very much for your work and for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Angela Gibson, surgeon specializing in the surgical treatment of trauma and burns and surgical care with the UW Health Wound Healing Services in the Department of Surgery at UW-Madison. Dr. Brian Pogue is chair of the Wisconsin Institute for Medical Research Department of Medical Physics. Great to have them with us today. Well, I tell you what, it's always a team effort here, and we've got a great team. Our producers, Clara Niper, Joel Patnaud, our technical directors Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive director is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.